Welcome to the Future of Teamwork podcast, where we explore cutting-edge strategies to keep teams human-centered, drive innovation, and empower you with the tools and insights needed to help your team excel and thrive in today's rapidly changing world. Your host is Dane Gruneveld, a seasoned expert with over 20 years of experience enhancing team dynamics and innovation. Today, we're excited to have Patrick McClure, founder and president of Impact Performance Team and a former quarterback at Clemson, who brings a unique perspective from the world of sports to the dynamics of business leadership. In this episode, Patrick shares his insights on, first, adapting sports principles to business. Explore how strategies from sports can enhance business practices, particularly in terms of culture and leadership. Second, preparation as a competitive advantage. Patrick delves into the crucial role of preparation in setting oneself apart in business. He explains how adopting the mindset that separation is in the preparation can significantly differentiate leaders and teams. Finally, accountability techniques. Learn about Patrick's effective methods for holding people accountable, ensuring that team members meet their commitments and contribute to collective goals. Join us for an inspiring discussion that bridges the gap between athletic and corporate worlds, providing actionable strategies to enhance your leadership and team effectiveness. So, teamwork makes the dream work, and we're here to inspire your next collaborative breakthrough. Gather your team or put on your headphones and let's dive in together.
Welcome to the Future of Teamwork podcast. My name is Dane Gruneveld, CEO of the Huddle 3 Group. And today I'm joined by Patrick McClure. Patrick is the founder of Impact Performance Team, but also he's got a great story as far as his football career. He's a former D1 quarterback at Clemson, which is an awesome school, awesome program, winning team. So really excited for this conversation. And thanks for coming on the show, Patrick.
Yeah, Dane, thank you for having me. Excited to be here. It's going to be fun.
It's going to be super fun. And I've promised I'm not going to get into the rugby versus football debate. But
I don't know enough about rugby to have a debate, but I was watching a lot of the Olympics and it was entertaining.
yeah, particularly that sevens format. So tell me a little bit more about you. You know, tell the listeners, you know, what your story is, how you've come to be doing this really cool work around high-performing teams.
Yeah, absolutely. So I went to school at Clemson. I played quarterback there. Was very fortunate to be there at a good time, is what I always say. I didn't play in a ton of games. I was a backup quarterback behind a really good guy named Trevor Lawrence, who was the number one overall draft pick during my time there. But played quarterback there for 3 years. Won a national championship. Won a few ACC championships. Went to the playoffs. Just a surreal experience. I grew up a Clemson fan. My dad went to Clemson, so it was a dream come true. I remember when I was a little kid manifesting about running down that hill and putting on that Clemson uniform. So God opened doors for me and was thankful enough to, you know, have hard work and some diligence to get there. And after my time at Clemson, I jumped into the professional working world and had absolutely no idea what I wanted to do, but I interviewed around with a ton of different companies. I networked and never really found something that I really thought was fitting from like a culture standpoint or a job description. I thought at least I wanted to be in sales because I was a driven, competitive individual and wanted to have big goals and things to go accomplish. And so I ended up getting connected with an insurance agency. It's a national firm, and they had a location in Greenville, and I met with their executives, and it reminded me a lot of my time at Clemson, just about the culture, the people, their mission, their vision. And that's what sold me. It wasn't about a salary. It wasn't about the role, or it wasn't certainly not about insurance. I didn't know anything about it, but it was the type of organization it was the type of leaders they had and the vision and strategy and their commitment to grow and be the best they could. And so I took a role there and was a producer, getting my license, and I had a little bit of success for my first year there. And then the president of South Carolina came to me and said, you know, do you have any desire to get into leadership at some point? And I was like, well, you know, I've kind of naturally gravitated towards leadership positions in my whole life growing up and as a quarterback, as an athlete. That's just kind of who I am. He's like, well, some people have noticed some of the success you've had and how you've led your peers and how you've kept people accountable and just the motivation and energy you bring to the office. Just I don't know what's going to come of it, but there might be an opportunity here in the next 12 to 18 months. And so I kept my chin down, kept grinding. And then a month goes by and he says, you know, we got an opportunity for you to become the South Carolina state sales leader. And I'm 23 at the time. Again, fresh out, had no, still, I mean, I had some success, but didn't know a ton about insurance, but had clearly been doing something right as it led to leading individuals within the office in our segment. And I was like, yeah, it sounds perfect. So at age 23, I started managing 5 offices in South Carolina. It was about $30 million in revenue and barely knew my left from right. But I was like, I'm going to go attack this thing. As long as I got some good leadership and coaching, I can go do this thing. And jumped into that role. And we had a ton of success over a year span. I think 80% of our sales producers achieved a higher sales goal than they did the prior year. We grew our sales by 30%. We had, we had 15% organic growth over these 5 offices, which hadn't been done before. And so during my time when I was doing all that, I was traveling across the state, you know, staying in hotels, seeing my family. And my dad was an entrepreneur his whole life. And he was like, you know what you're doing, like managing 5 offices, like you could be doing this sales leadership or consulting. Cause he's like, again, like it's not so much about training what you're doing about insurance. It's you're empowering teams, you're motivating, you're leading, you're casting vision, you're casting dreams, and you're holding people accountable to go achieve those things. He's like, you could be doing that for yourself. And I was like, well, I don't know what that would look like, but I'd be interested in finding out. So I end up in the March of 2023, I decided like, now's the time. I was young, no wife, no kids, and had a little bit of money in the bank. And I was thinking like freelance consulting, I don't have a lot of overhead. Like I'm just going to go shoot for this thing and see if I can't find some businesses that would appreciate the help of empowering their teams and seeing if I can bring some growth to their organization. And it's so funny. Like I always talk about, I'm passionate in my faith, but God's timing with all this stuff. I had a buddy that I'd ran into at a few networking events and saw him that spring and asked if I was still doing insurance. And I said, no, I actually just started my own company. I want to help coach, train sales teams and empower organizations. And he was like, let's have a conversation. I'd like to talk to you about how we could grow our sales department. And then sure enough, within a month after starting my own company, I had my first client. So I was like,
wow,
that was a lot easier than I thought it was going to be.
Yes.
And so ended up working with him and then picked up a few more projects here and there that were short term. And within 6 months working with his organization, we increased net profit by 125%. We hired more. Yeah. We hired some more sales, their business development executives. We coached, we developed, we trained them. I started running culture and team meetings for his office. And then from there, just being able to have like case studies and results and expanding my network, we've been able to pick up a few more clients here and there. So it's been a whirlwind over the past 3 years. And I look back on it, like this May was 3 years since I graduated from college. And there's been this much movement. There's been, I talk a lot about the success, but the failures multiply how much success I've had. So there's been a lot of learning opportunities through that time, but that's where we are today.
That's so neat. And it's a huge achievement to be going through that journey in a compressed time straight out of college, particularly having left, you know, I know you're at college to learn, but also being part of a sports team. It's hard when we leave high performing teams when we've got all of this great energy and people and structure and, like you say, culture and mission and vision around you. That's a big shift. So you've done amazing.
That was one thing in particular that was kind of a shock to me getting into my first job. And it's no knock on anyone or any organization, but coming from a school and a team like Clemson, where the standard's so high and we have a great leader. And I always joke and say like Coach Sweeney is a phenomenal head coach, but he's a CEO. Like he knows he doesn't have the answer to everything. And he knows how to put people on the bus that know more than him. And he's just a phenomenal facilitator and manager of this program. And so having this benchmark of excellence in our football program, it was interesting coming into the professional career where some people were just wanting to clock in, clock out, and didn't have this internal drive that, man, I got to pick up this trash beside me because yeah, that's not my standard, or that I got to go above and beyond because I want to do more. I want to be at the top of the leaderboard. There was a culture shift coming in, but because it was ingrained in me for 4 years, I was like, what are we doing here? Like this,
yeah.
I can't stand idly by and see this stuff. So somebody's got to lead. Somebody's got to step up and go and do these things. And then I think through those actions is what helped develop a higher performing organization, especially within the first company. But then I noticed like that can be a theme sometimes. And it's, again, it's no knock. Some leaders just don't have the ability or the want to grab people by the face mask, like I always say in football,
yeah,
and hold somebody accountable. And I always appreciate when someone says, you know, that's not me. Like I'm not a confrontational or accountable individual with the folks that I employ or my teammates, but I need somebody like you who can do that. And I think that's where I've been able to add the most value for folks, is someone that's a great visionary that knows where they want to get, but maybe don't have the skill sets or abilities to go and facilitate certain actions. So,
yeah,
hey, find that other piece to the puzzle, bring them in, and then that's when we can get the ship sailing.
That's neat. And it's interesting the way you described Coach Sweeney as a CEO and a facilitator. And then tying into your last point, you know, when you're working with customers on their teams, you know, sometimes it's not the job of the CEO or the president or the founder to do everything. It's
yes,
to put those right people on the bus to build those. I love the way you said high standards.
Yes.
Because we're living in this world right now where we're super busy. There's all of these tools that are thrown at us, and we're constantly context switching. So it's hard to really look around any organization and observe those kind of symbols and systems that kind of suggest, hey, here's the standards that we live by. Here's what we hold each other accountable for.
Yeah. Well, and I think too, people can get so caught up in the day-to-day, like with just the mundane task and busyness, that it's easy to get caught up in, all right, what's right here in front of you. But I always think, yeah, it's healthy to take a step back and, okay, let's go revisit our, like, why are we doing, like, what's our purpose and why are we doing this? Why are we coming to work every day? And unless, yep, that's constantly being communicated from the leader, from the CEO, that it's going to have an impact on your employees and the teams that you're managing. Like, everybody needs to be constantly reminded of, okay, what's my why and what's my purpose as an individual, but also like, what's our why, the organization, and how is the day-to-day task that I'm doing today helping, yep, lead to the vision that we and goals that we have long-term for this organization, because I want to be a part of it.
Yeah.
I think that's very important for the CEO to have those conversations, or at least communicate that, because if someone's not bought into your purpose, your vision, and your dream, that's okay, but they just might not be the right fit for your team. And I think that's another piece that I've been able to add, or I feel like our company's been able to have value when talking with CEOs, is you want to provide, especially small businesses, you want to provide stability and opportunity for your employees. And I think a lot, yeah, of times, just natural human behavior, we can get complacent, but it's imperative to have folks that want to be there, are committed and bought in and see your vision and dream. And if they're not, that's okay. Let's help them find another bus to get on. But
yeah,
if you got one bad apple in the group, it can be a culture vulture from everybody else that's trying to get somewhere. And you got one or two individuals hanging them, like holding them back a little bit. And so, like, and it's tough for the folks that don't like to have those tough confrontational questions. You know, they're doing okay work, they're filling a seat, they're getting their job done, but unless they're bought in to go take things to the next level, they end up hindering you more than it end up helping. And
yeah,
so that's, and, you know, and it's tough conversations, but it's really real. And I think a lot of folks just, again, CEOs themselves and business owners, they get tied up in their day-to-day without taking a step back every month, every quarter to think about their personnel. Like, is this person,
yeah,
capable? Are they committed? And do they have the capacity to go and do these responsibilities I'm asking them of? And if you can't check those boxes, well, then let's have a confrontational question or conversation about it and see if they can check those three boxes, or see if there's a better place for them elsewhere. But it's, yeah, just like it's the half in, half out folks that you got to get everybody bought in, or you got to get out.
Yeah. And that's a tough decision for a lot of business owners, which is why I think bringing a good coach in that has a good systems framework is really important. And you've made some great comments in here. I've got about 7 questions written down, so I don't know how we're going to squeeze it all in. I'll start here. So when you look at vision, values, culture, when you're on a football team, you're playing for the trophy, right? And you're in a change room, and there's a lot that I would imagine is very visual. Gym, change room, you've got plans, you've got plays, everything's kind of written out. In businesses, often we don't do such a good job of creating those like physical symbols of our goals, our vision, how we work. How much of that do you tend to do when you go in and work with a team and try and elevate their performance? How much of it is when you're talking about culture and mission, and you said sort of vision casting? Is it really building artifacts?
So yeah, it's a great question. So one thing that I always do, and this is from working with sales teams, is anytime I come into an organization, I like to have thorough hour and a half one-on-ones with everyone on the team. And yeah. Where I'm coming from, and like I said, like my goal is to make a positive impact on others. I want people, and I get giddy talking about it, because this is like, I'm going to pivot here for just half a second.
Yeah.
When I was at Clemson, I told you I was a backup quarterback. I wasn't the one going on the field, throwing the touchdowns, having the accolades, doing all that stuff. My first 2 years I spent on scout team. So I was a practice player, almost like a hitting dummy. But I knew the work that I provided, if I could go on the field and give it my all every single time, it was going to better prepare the defense for those games on Saturdays. And so I joke about it. I get more amped up when I see the defense running a play, or they're seeing a play that we ran in practice, and then they pick it off or cause a fumble or a big sack. So I'm like, we ran that over and over again, and my arm's killing me because we ran that play so many times, but like saw the result. And so I knew, like, there's something to say about being a part of something bigger than yourself. And so for me, like, I get excited just being able to see others achieve their goals and have success. And a big part of that was from my time at Clemson, not being able to get the personal accolades, but knowing that what I was there for was to help my team get better. And so like that mentality that I've brought over, like same, like it applies to the individuals in the organizations that I work with. It's like, I get so excited. Like, I got a text this morning about one of our producers just closed a new deal it was a new insurance contract.
Yeah.
I was like, just text me, they're jacked up. And so that fires me up, even though I wasn't the one selling it, but I'm like, she was telling me about this opportunity she had. She worked it from start to finish and then closed it. Like, that gets me excited. And so one thing that I like to do with all the individuals that I meet with on sales teams or in companies is, you know, tell me, like, again, I like to know your why and purpose, but like, what is your dream? Like, whether it's in the business working here, like, yeah, if it's the amount of sales you want to get, or if it's the type of lifestyle you want to have, like yeah, what are you trying to get to? And if someone tells me, like, man, they get fired up, big smile on their face, I want to get to here because I want to pay for my kids to go to school. I want to have a vacation house. I want to have money in the bank. I want to be able to travel whenever I want. You know, I don't want to have to worry about financials. I'm like, that's phenomenal. Well, let's break that down. Where are you at today? And this is where you want to be. And then let's find that delta. And then let's create a reasonable time frame to get there. And then finding those and creating those goals that lead to our dreams, then I ask them, like, okay, so this is what you say you want. This is a good plan for us to get there. Are you comfortable, and do you want me to help coach you and hold you accountable to hit these things that you said you wanted to go hit? And once I get that yes, I'm bought in and I'm committed, and I want you to coach me hard. And that's what I tell her. I'm like, I will get onto you as hard as you let me. I promise you, it's pretty close how much I want this, just as much as you want it. So if you let me hold you accountable and coach you and train you, we're going to go get there. But it's up to you. Like, I'm committed. Yeah. If you're committed, I'm going to be committed. And so it's like, I want to hear the dreams and desires, because I'm a huge dreamer. Like I told you, when I was 2 years old, I guess a little bit, I was going to football games at 2 years old in Death Valley. Yeah. When I was 5 and 6, I was in the front yard with my dad throwing the football with the Clemson helmet on. Literally, I can visualize me being on the field in a Clemson uniform at age 6. And so I'm huge in being a dream builder and a manifester. And we're finite individuals, but we can go attain a whole lot more than sometimes we think.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we can let outside factors and limiting beliefs shut that down. And so I tried to blow that up, and because we are capable of so much more. So I want to know, what is your dream life? What does that look like? And then how is that possible to get there through the job you have today, through your role, through your goals? Is it attainable? And then how can we set metrics to go and get there?
Yeah.
And if you want me to lead you and hold you accountable, you're going to have my commitment. I'm going to make sure we're going to go and do those things.
That's super cool. So that 1.5 hour one-to-one lets you map those kind of dreams, aspirations out. Do they then turn into a physical artifact? Are you building a chart? Are you putting something on their wall? How does that kind of play out?
Yeah, I always create a dreams list and then a business plan. And I always like to break the dream list over 3 to 5 years and then always create a yearly business plan. And as it relates to sales and even with CEOs, I've always created these business plans based off of preparation, activity, and execution. So, separation is in the preparation. How you're going to surpass others and teams is in the preparation. So what are you doing to prepare to get better? And from a sales standpoint, that's studying our offerings and services. That's getting with account managers and doing flashcards. And I want you to be able to recite every offering and service and how it's being transitioned from the point of sale to the onboarding and to the account management. And you need to know that. And then it's also, how are we role playing, cold calling, or how we role playing intro and discovery meetings and proposals. And then preparation. Another thing is, one of it's a mindset thing too. In order for me to go perform my best, I know personally from getting out of football, when I had that structure lost, I didn't know who I was my first year out of school. That was a really, really hard transition. But from going through that challenging time, I know I'm at my best when I'm getting at least 7.5 hours of sleep and I'm working out first thing in the morning. If I don't work out first thing in the morning, I'm grouchy, irritated, and unmotivated.
I joined that group.
Yeah. So I know I got to go be doing those things. That's another piece of the preparation. And that's my commitment that, okay, I'm going to get up at 5:30 in the morning. I'm going to go work out and I'm going to go eat well, so I can go attack my day. And then that leads into the activity portion. What are your KPIs and what are those key activities that you got to be doing on a weekly or a daily, weekly, and monthly basis that's going to set you up for success? And then the execution is, all right, the actual for sales, it's your closing style. What is your sales process? And then getting into the nuances of that. And once we can knock out the preparation, the activity, the execution really takes care of itself. That's really just the final thing is, I'm going to go close 10 accounts this year that are this size in revenue because I've done the activity, because I've done the preparation. The execution is just the end at the very bottom.
Yeah, I like that model. That works really neatly. And I like how you started it with the dreams, because it drives that accountability. You can hold them to the, hey, well, we said you were going to achieve this, whether it was an engagement ring by next summer or whatever
yes,
it was.
Exactly. Exactly.
And how are you tracking towards it? Are you doing the work? And I'd never heard of separation and preparation.
Yeah. Well, I think too, it's very easy for when, and I haven't had this experience per se, but other folks have, that, you have a CEO or owner get outside support or help, and everybody's like, all right, who's this cat he's dragged in? What on earth could we be stirring up here? And so everybody kind of gets a little defensive, but taking that time to truly connect and build a relationship with somebody is so important. If I want somebody leading me, if somebody's going to come in as a leader, I want them to lead me and I want them to know about me, what drives me, what irritates me, what trains me. And so I think it's important for that leader or whoever's coming in to know that stuff about people. And so that takes time to build and foster relationship. But like that, again, that's part of the leader or the consultant or advisor. Their responsibility is to come in and nurture that individual and create a relationship that's not just hourly pay or not just because this is what we all said we were going to be doing. So I guess we'll meet here for 30 minutes to an hour and check a box. Like a check a box mentality has never led to success. Like it's the intentionality that you take in every meeting, every conversation that you have. And that was one big thing that it goes back to the preparation standpoint, like being intentional with every little detail of this plan or like your goal and dream. Like are you just going in there to hope for the best, or are you really particular about this specific thing that you want to work on? And are you prepared beforehand? Like I even think before meetings, people can just hop in and doze off now and then.
Wing it.
Yeah, I feel like they're consuming knowledge. I'm like, I get anxious myself if I come in and try to wing something. But like I know if I take 30 minutes to prepare beforehand, I'm going to come in here and I'm going to bring value because that's what somebody's like relying on me for. I think like our time's our biggest asset. And so when you have the attention of an individual or even a group, it's your responsibility as a leader to come in and make that the best hour they could have in their day, the best 30 minutes of their day. And like, that's where I go back to impact. It's like every interaction or every run-in, I want somebody to come out of there smiling, fired up and motivated, or damn, okay, what he said was real. I need to lock back in. Yeah, he's on my butt. I got to go change something. So I want to empower with every interaction I have. And I think that can just, it's, and again, it's very, I'm guilty of doing it where it's, you have a long day, you have a long week and you're like, man, one more thing. I got to just hop in here and check a box. But I know from experience that that never amounts or leads to anything positive other than just waste of time and shooting the bull.
Yeah, I think you're right. Particularly that intentionality is big. And then, so you're doing that at an individual level, Patrick, and then you're working with the CEO, you're helping really engage and help and connect with each producer. How does that then roll up to the team strategy, team goals? Is there a framework for that, or does it depend on the CEO or the business owner that you're working with?
Yeah, I think it depends on the CEO and the business owner. As much as that's some place that I'm guilty of, like I'd like to take charge, I like to take lead, but at the same time, like, man, at some point, like you got to be the one to communicate this stuff. You got to have these ambitions and dreams as well. And I still have those same conversations with them too, but it's interesting. Like once you get into an organization, like everything there's, if you start having success in one area, it starts to rub off on other people. And they're like, well, why is this person more energized over the past couple of weeks? You know, why are they having more success? I want some of that. And so then I just think it starts to infiltrate other areas of your business. And then like, again, once you create a new standard, everybody else rises. And then the folks that don't need to be on the bus quickly weed themselves out. And it's interesting because that's happened. I'm not kidding, Dane. Every single organization that I've been a part of, when we've came in the first 90 days, created that new standard, the folks that I knew didn't need to be there and could tell they didn't want to be there, they end up weeding themselves out without even having to have tough conversations or letting people go. It's just obvious that they're not going to be able to keep up with the rising tide. And again, that type, and I think for one in business, sales and revenue drives everything. And so like that starts to rub off on everybody else. You know, now, you know, the service staff, account management, they're going to have to start picking up because we've got more business coming in. We got to get motivated. We got to get our motor cranked up and we got to start hiring people, and they're going to have to be bought in and on the same page because sales is growing. So we're growing. So like, again, rising tide lifts all ships, except for a few that might have a hole in the bottom of them, and then they quickly fall out. So it's interesting. Yeah, it's interesting. Once you like, when you can get commitment and from individuals that like, all right, this is how we're going to go operate and how we're going to go do things. everything else seems to take care of itself. And like, I used to think like that it was like a fluke thing when I first started doing this out of school. I'm like, again, I don't know a lot about sales. I'm a year into this thing and I don't know a lot about managing people per se, because I've never been a manager. But I'm like, there's something to say about creating a standard of excellence and helping other people individually go accomplish and go do the things that they're aspiring to go do, and just creating this vision for them that excites them and motivates them and wakes their butt up in the morning to go do something special. And I think like, I think that's, and so that's something that like I've realized, and don't want to say this in any egotistical manners, like I've been blessed with the ability to lead others and try to get the best out of those that I'm around. And I think Peyton Manning or some quarterbacks always said like leadership is influence. And I've been fortunate enough to at least be in positions where I feel like I've been able to influence people. And it's, I always want to make sure I'm influencing people for the best. And it's been a very, very cool past couple years being able to see that happen.
Yeah, it sounds like it. And I'm envisaging a lot of these engagements and the teams that you're helping lift. I love what you shared there, and that, you know, if you've got a team that's really humming, they're performing, they're excited, their energy's different, they walk differently in the office, they're joking in the break room, you name it, that everyone's kind of poking their heads up over the cubicles and going, I want a little bit of that.
Oh yeah, they want some. They want. It's contagious, man. It's contagious. Yeah. But just as much as that's contagious, so is the doubt, the negativity. Yeah. And that stuff's probably even more contagious than the, I mean, misery loves company. That stuff's probably more contagious than the high energy. And so it's very important. Like I go back to people and culture. You can't have those culture vultures or any little bit of negativity start poking holes in what the dream that you got, whether you're a CEO, like the dream you got for your organization, or an individual, the dream you got for your life and your business. And like that's a personal element too. It's like you can't, it's at some point you got to start saying no to people. You got to start changing the type of friend groups that you hang out with, the stuff you are watching, the stuff you're listening to, the stuff you're reading. Like all that stuff plays such a huge role on you. And I think we're in a day and age now, like with social media and the access we have, like there's especially this year of an election, and not turning this political or any way, but there's just so much negativity out there. And oh crap, this side says, oh, hell's breaking loose. This is like, there's so much crap and filth out there.
There
and
is.
It's so important just to shut that stuff off and feed yourself with positive information that can lift you up and the others around you. And I think like it's, you become a unique individual, like not conforming to the world. And like, you can start to see yourself make an impact on others. Like, why is, you know, why is Dane different, man? Every time I get around him, man, he's smiling, he's energized, he's ready to go. Well, you know, Dane's reading positive books. He's listening to good music. He's watching funny shows. He's not watching the news, and he's working out in the morning. He's eating healthy. Like, that's different. And then you look at 95% of the world, and it's all negativity. And so I think like it's very, I say this to a lot of young folks too, like there's such an opportunity to make a positive impact on the world and those around you if you just choose to do a few things different. And that's all, it's just a few decisions that if you can commit to doing these things differently and be different than the others around you, you're gonna make an impact on people. And like I've seen that happen in my relationships as well, where, you know, I've had personal relationships where, you know, as some people come into your life for a few months, some people are meant to be long-term. And again, you want to make the most out of those relationships. But at some point it's like this interactions that I'm having are causing more harm or more negativity than when I was just by myself. So why do I need to go to dinner? Why do I need to go spend time when we're just going to complain about something? And that's going to make me anxious or nervous about my day for work tomorrow. Like that, you got to get that filth out of your life. And it's no knock on them. I'm sure there's several other people that would love to have them in their company, and they can rah-rah about whatever misery they're going through, but man, I don't want that in my life. Like I've been there. It's easy.
It's tough.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's tough. And I think we're seeing that particularly for our youth and the generation entering the workforce. We had a good friend of mine, Eric from Ambassadors of Compassion, on the show recently. And he talks a lot about that with sports teams, with kids in schools, around choosing what you allow to influence you. Mm-hmm. And I think as much as social media is getting a bad rap for its impact on kids, you're absolutely right. It's impacting all of our team members right throughout the organization.
Yeah. Everyone. It's not just the youth. I mean, like you look up and I've been super aware about it, but it kind of gives me the shiver sometimes. You go out to eat or you're at dinner or you're just waiting in line for something at a store and people can't go without doing this. I'm like, man, introduce yourself, ask someone how's their day going, or if you're across from your spouse or your friend at a dinner table and you're just waiting on the bread to come out, man, y'all got to be talking about something good or something going on, but like we're just buried in our phones. And yeah, it's
there's a cool thing that my coach talks to me about, and he's like, the radio. So like when you're in a room right now, whatever room you're in, there's always radio waves passing through. And what you choose as your device to kind of tune into that frequency will allow you to listen to a particular radio wave. And he's just like, so often as adults, we're going through life unaware. We're just kind of going through and we're stuck on one channel. Where we're in the room, we don't have to go and make a lot of money or find a new job. All you need to do is stop where you're at, like you said, small things, and just change the frequency of what you're listening to. And it brings so much. It brings so much energy and curiosity and optimism. But it's a mindset.
Yeah, and it's about being in the present and living in the now. That was actually one of Coach Swinney's words for the year, I think, in 2020. His word was now. Like, be great where your feet are. Like, the grass isn't greener on the other side. The grass is green where you water it. And he was just talking about, like, don't wait to create great habits. You know, don't wait to tell people you love them. Don't wait and sit around for something to come to you. Like, live in the now. Take the chance to go step your foot forward and make the most of the opportunities that are right here in front of you. Just bloom where you're planted. So to your point, I think it's like, it's easy to get distracted when there is negativity or things going on. They're like, man, I got to make a whole life change, or I got to be doing something different. I got to go get a new job, or maybe it's my relationship's not right. And it's, well, let's take half a second. Let's think about where you are right now and what you can control right now. Because odds are a lot of it is it's in your control, some things you could be doing differently.
Yeah. And that's powerful when you multiply it across a whole bunch of team members. Because one thing helping one individual salesperson or CEO lift their awareness and mindset, but once you get a team of people like you see in a sports environment that are really clued in and switched on, and they're looking for how they can support each other and connect with each other, it's off the charts.
It's fascinating. And I haven't done it to that large of a scale. The companies that I've been able to work with have been small businesses, except for my first employer. We were, you know, it was probably 30, 35 producers, which is the largest team I worked with. But I think about, you know, football teams and like the most successful programs, man, these guys that are doing it really, really well, they're leading 100, 120, 18 to 22 year old young men and getting them bought in to go do these things, which is just so impressive to me. But it's like, goes back to, I was telling you how great Swinney was as of a CEO to have everyone locked in on one purpose, one mission, one vision. And all the supporting staff too. I mean, it's spectacular. So I've been very fortunate. I tell everybody too, because everybody says, you know, like, you don't act your age, you act like you're older, all this stuff. And I've said, well, you know, well, I got my degree in marketing at Clemson, but I also got my PhD in leadership from being with Swinney for 4 years. And I was like, that really gave me a leap out of school again that a lot of folks that my age haven't had the opportunity to do. So again, very blessed there, but had a lot of experience crammed into 4 years during just my time at Clemson, which is extraordinary.
It is extraordinary. I think the impact that great coaches, teachers, leaders have on us, particularly early in life, is massive. Which actually brings me back to a point I had from our pre-show conversation, which was to check in on the story of your dad and working with your dad.
Yeah.
So I was talking to Annie Dean the other day. I was at the Team 24 conference that Atlassian does in Vegas. And she was talking about how many mums are now working from home in high-level mm-hmm. jobs, and the kids are seeing mum at home. So she called it a mum BA. so you're getting an MBA by watching mum. You got a PhD in leadership by watching Coach Sweeney. Yeah. But you've also got this story about having sort of seen your dad grow up as an entrepreneur, and now you're even getting the chance to work together.
Yeah, so we went down to Atlanta last week to visit a client, and it blows my mind. Like, when I was growing up, he had his first company, he just worked from home. He had his own office. And so
yeah.
All I knew was, like, I thought it was weird that other dads would go to an office or go to work somewhere else, because I always knew my dad being home growing up. But it always blows my mind when I go to these places, like a client, and I get the chance to see my dad work and operate. Like, we're on the way home and I'm like, you absolutely crushed that. And he's like, well, I appreciate you saying that. You know, I feel like I missed on a few things here and there. And I'm like, I got so far to go, because that stuff's good. But it's really neat. My dad's been a phenomenal leader and influencer in my life. And I always feel like I'm super blessed and fortunate from the men I've had in my life as role models and examples. But, you know, one of the things that my dad told me growing up, and I still say it today, is, you know, somebody's got to lead. And that, yeah. Whether it was when I was 8 years old and I was getting in trouble with my friends, he would look at me and say, Patrick, you can have fun, but somebody's got to lead. And he said that when I got into Clemson and I was on scout team, he said, somebody's got to lead over there, and it yeah. might as well be you. You get yeah. into the workforce, you know, I was like, man, I don't feel like everybody, like, what are we doing here? Like, nobody's wanted to go get after it or go do this stuff. He's like, someone's got to lead. And so, like, that's been ingrained in me. And again, fortunate enough to now see him, now that we're working together, he came on board a few months ago and we've been working on a few clients together, and like seeing him lead and demonstrate all the things that he told me and taught me about growing up is super surreal. And then yeah. him like still being humble and transparent and vulnerable enough to be like, man, what could I have done better at? Or like, can you help yeah. me with this? Like, he's asking me at 25, like, he was like, what would you have done in this situation? I'm like, I might not have the answer, but this is maybe what I've done earlier. And so, like, it's cool having a really great partner and teammate in my life and my business, but also that being a father and somebody, when we're back on long car trips, can talk about, you know, our friends, mom, family, you know, like
yeah.
marriage, life lessons, all sorts of stuff, like in between the work, and then go out to dinners and have a good time, cut up, talk about work and life. And it's been super special.
It's super special. Yeah. I've got a warm place in my heart for family business. And I've been fortunate to work in a couple of family businesses, and there's something there. And these days it doesn't even have to be a family business. It could be consulting, advising, teaming mm-hmm. up, but it's a cool way to, like, pass on knowledge, build on those connections and relationships and appreciation for each other and gratitude. I think it's super powerful.
Yeah, it's special. I've learned a lot from seeing him, know, like, his experience and a startup business, like what I've been trying to do, and how yeah. he's able to come in and coach other business owners. And I'm over there just jotting down notes, like, okay, he was asking about this because that's important because it would lead to this. And I'm just like, map it. It looks like I got a spider web all over my notebook and just rambling things down. Just drinking through a fire hose and just trying to be a sponge every time I'm around him.
That's cool. Well, I've got one final question, Patrick. This has been an awesome conversation. There's plenty of others that I wrote down that didn't get to, but I love the visceral, physical image that you created when you said, you know, grab the face mask and really hold someone accountable. So in a sports setting, that's fairly well understood how it all works. And people seem to do a better job of holding each other accountable. In businesses, I think the stat is 83% of humans prefer not to confront others. It's just not their natural style. So how do you create a human way to hold people accountable to do that face mask grab in the right way?
Well, I think it goes back to getting a commitment on the front end. Yeah. And I'll tell you an example. We had, I do a special sales meeting that's, you know, not particular to our company sales meetings. And I call it a boot camp sales meeting. And I'm like, on the beforehand, I'm like, this is going to be difficult. It's going to be early in the morning. We're going to be going through this stuff. You're going to have homework. Please let me know if you're committed and want to do these things and be a part of it. If not, it's okay. Like, I'm not going to hold it against you, but this group, we're going to go get after it. And so we went and we start to see this group have a little bit more success than the others. And so one person's like, okay, I think I want to go do it. And then doesn't show up to the meeting. Yeah. And so I have to have a conversation. Look, this, again, it's not going to be for everybody. And you weren't a part of it on the front end. And you said you wanted to now open the door. This has now been a close-knit environment where we've been speaking freely, very vulnerable. And so we were letting you in on this room, and then you don't show. And we were ready to welcome you with open arms and welcome you into the team and help raise you to the standard. And then you back out on us. Look, that's not what this group's for. So I can't have you come in here and disrupt what we've got going on. And again, that's not an easy conversation to have, but it's because I care and love and appreciate the room and the group that we have there. And so I can't let that affect that one individual's actions go and affect somebody else. And so for me, it like the when people say they have a tough time with accountability and confrontation, it's typically because they mean it's like, it's fearful, it's attacking, it's coming down, someone's not doing something right, like you're going to get in trouble, you're getting fired. And it's like, no, accountability is for those people who want to get better. And I'm giving you accountability because I love and I care for you and I want you to meet your full potential. I'm not accountable for how you receive that. I'm going to give it to you in a loving and a straightforward manner, which I think everybody should present information, especially when it's tough conversations. Don't hide anything, be real. So I'm going to tell you how it is, and we're going to go one or two options. Like, here's how you can fix it and get better, and I'm going to help you go and get there, because if you want to go do this, I'm going to be here for you, and we can go work on that. But if not, then again, it might just not be for you, or you're not going to be around these other people that have bought in and have cared for it, and I can't let you have that effect on other people. So it's going to be your decision one way or the other. I'll help you if you want to get here, and I'll help you on the way out, or help you position you somewhere else. But it's got to be from that loving and supportive measure, because you know the capabilities that your team has and that they have. Or if like you start to realize like, hey, they're not doing their responsibilities, then all right, you got to nip that in the bud quick. Let's talk about an exit plan here.
Yeah, that's neat. I think you described that brilliantly, Patrick. And again, it's more evidence of the PhD in leadership under Sweeney. Like, that's wisdom well ahead of your years. And I work in this space every day, and people always get stuck on giving feedback, and they come up with little acronyms and measures. But what I heard you say was, you know, start with the commitment on the front end, which is...
That's the biggest part. It's like, if that's one thing that I could give anybody, it's make expectations super, super clear up front, and then get somebody's, I even do on the business plan, like a written, like your sign off, or get like, I want a verbal commitment or a sign off that this is what I'm going to do and how I'm going to go do it. And then so you can just bring it back. Look, you said you want to do this, but now you're not. So now it's much easier to address when you have their full commitment and now they're going back on their word or their actions have changed. Like, we either need to get you back on track, or I guess this really wasn't for you.
Yeah, no, that's powerful. And it ties back into probably my favorite quote of this conversation from you, which is the separation and preparation.
Separation and preparation. Absolutely. Yeah.
Bring the commitments, bring the care, bring the love. It's cool. Well, Patrick, it's been a great conversation. I'm excited to keep in touch and keep following you. For any of our listeners that, you know, interested in having you come in and drive some impact in their teams and their team's performance, how do they find you?
I'm on LinkedIn, Patrick McClure. Our website is impactperformanceteam.com. You can also reach, we have our email and phone number on there as well. It's cool. Probably the best way, or directly through LinkedIn. Happy to connect with everyone.
That's neat. Well, thanks again for taking the time today. It's been great.
Absolutely. Thank you, Dan. It's great.
Thank you for joining us. Remember that by embracing vulnerability, trusting our intuition, and approaching challenges with compassion, we not only strengthen our teams, but also pave the way for a future where collaboration thrives. If you're hungry for more insights, strategies, and research on collaboration, head over to thefutureofteamwork.com. There, you can join our mailing list to stay updated with the latest episodes and get access to exclusive content tailored to make your team thrive. Together, we can build the future of teamwork. Until next time,